Before I begin to speak about what I would like to speak about, I'd like to first ask each of you a question. And, of course, you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but I'll tell you what it is, and you can think about it for a minute. And if you choose to answer it, we'll just go around, and I can hear what you say. And please keep your answer to one sentence. So it's not a test. It's actually, it would be helpful for me in terms of what I wish to speak about, to have a little bit of a sense of your answer to this question. So the question is, what brings you here? And in general, if you have a question, that's fine. But if there's something about tonight, if there was some kind of like, should I go? Should I not go? You know, you're here. So I'm just curious if anybody here is willing to start. Yes?
I don't know about other people, but personally what brings me here weekly usually are the various guest speakers and their various views on Buddhist, usually Zazen, practice.
Okay, so various views about Buddhist and practice and Zazen.
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you. Zazen and me, or us all. Yeah.
Specifically.
Oh. Okay. Thank you, Lisa. Yeah. How about you?
It's how you, Kathy, engage with the teachings.
Okay. Okay. Good to see you. What brings you here?
A sense of community, especially in light of the actions that have taken place in the world over the past couple of days.
A sense of community, especially given what's been going on in the world. Mm-hmm. Okay.
To deepen my understanding of the Dharma and just to support the Sangha by being another person here.
To deepen your understanding of the Dharma and to support the Sangha with your presence. Practicing with the great matter, birth and death, no better place than Sangha, such as this.
Tonight in particular is my job.
It's my job.
In general, help me keep the big picture.
And to help you keep the big picture. Okay? Yeah, so to be with Sangha. Yeah.
Feel sick, but I don't want to go and be at the temple.
Yeah. So to be here at the temple, especially with what's going on in the world, and to express your devotion, be with Sangha. Great. So the tranquility and the not busyness you find comforting. Okay?
I think tonight it's the intimacy with myself, with not knowing, with the Sangha, with you.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, intimacy with self, with other, with the Sangha, and not knowing. Mm-hmm.
Coming to the Zen Center helps me to pay attention.
Helps you pay attention. Great. I'm saying it, by the way, repeating it so that the tape picks it up. Because sometimes I know when I listen to the tapes, I don't always hear the comments, and I want to presence everybody in the room and why we're all here tonight.
To meet myself/life in a wholehearted way.
Okay. Okay, to meet yourself / life in a wholehearted way. Yeah.
Well, for me, it is my job also, and but I think particularly on a Wednesday night, it's interesting to hear so many different expressions, such a variety of expressions, both from the speaker and from questions and so on.
So along with it being your job, just how enjoyable it is to hear a diversity of perspectives from both the speakers and the Sangha.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Interesting.
To open to the diversity.
Mm-hmm. Opening to diversity. Great. And?
Being part of this loving, grounding, and grounding community that allows me to give the love that I find in being here with you all and give it out.
So being part of this grounded, grounding community and being able to then take it out and share it.
Yes.
Wow. Well, what an assembly. What great intention and commitment. The general public, perhaps, thinks about Buddhism or thinks about Zen. I mean, I almost brought it in, but I didn't. I saw an advertisement for pistachios in a magazine. I don't know if you've seen that. It's this woman sitting in full lotus with her hands up like this, and it says something about being mindful. And if you eat these pistachios, that, and it has a variety of interesting buzzwords about calm, you'd be about calmness and about, you know, mindfulness. And so it's interesting. I mean, certainly, as many of us said and as we experience tranquility, I mean, we do come here for tranquility. We do come for this being a quiet place where we can sit, where we can practice Zazen. And that is a huge and important part of what we do here. And yet, it could equally be said that Buddhism and Zen in particular, I want to talk about Zen in particular. This is a Zen temple, and I am a Zen person, though I'm other things too, but tonight I'm a Zen person. I'm always a Zen person. It's also could be said that awakening and waking up together is an incredibly relational affair. So it looks like we come in here and we sit down, and in Zen we even face the wall. We don't even face each other. So you peek in a Zendo and it looks like, oh my gosh, these people, they're just all alone, sitting in their little cushions, awakening to the way. And yet, if you read our stories, if you read the stories of the Zen tradition, our treasured stories about our ancestors and their experiences, what you find is that all of this processing of the experience that we have in our meditation happens in relationship. Whether it's student and teacher, the teacher nudging or pushing or encouraging the student coming to the teacher with his or her big questions. There's stories about companions and comrades, you know, Dao Wu and Yuan Shang and Hui Feng and Seppo and all these ancestors. I mean, they're having conversations with each other. You know, hey, what are you doing over there sweeping with that broom? You look pretty busy, you know? Well, don't you know there's one who's not busy? What do you mean there's one who's not busy? Are you saying there's two moons? What moon is this? You know, that's Zen conversation between Dharma brothers and Dharma sisters. So we're testing each other, we're challenging each other, we're encouraging each other in these relationships, student-teacher, peer-to-peer, and group, the experience of group, whether this be the group within the temple and within the Zen community or other intimate groups that you may be part of, a workplace, a family of choice, a neighborhood, an organization. I want to talk about this tonight. I consider this to be spiritual intimacy. So I want to talk about spiritual intimacy, as in particular in the Zen tradition, as expressed through relationship. I want to start with the student-teacher relationship, and then I want to talk about peer relationship, and I want to talk about community relationship. You know, one of my favorite stories, I know that I've told many times, is the story. It's a master and student story where the student is carrying the robe, and, you know, the master says, "Do you know the business beneath the patched robe?" And the student says, "No, I don't." "Well, would you like to know?" I would like to know." "Well, then ask me." "Oh, okay. What is the business under the patched robe?" Intimacy. And the student starts to cry, as they often do in these stories, just overwhelmed with, like, "Oh, intimacy." And then the master says, "Yeah, intimacy, and even deeper intimacy." So, you know, sometimes I think with my ideas, I'm just way out here, and I have these ideas, and they're way outside of the teaching and the scriptures, but these are the stories of our awakening. The secret under the patched robe, intimacy, and even deeper intimacy. This is our tradition. So I want to claim that and celebrate that together tonight. We had a meeting not too long ago in this room, and some of us were remembering Catherine. Catherine was the second kind of founding teacher that we had here. The first founding teacher here was Coben Chino, and he founded this place, I don't know, about 40 years ago. Had a vibrant community. They left, and then Catherine was the next teacher who came, and she was with us for, I don't know, 25 years or so until she died a few years ago. She was my root teacher, and I practiced with her probably for, I don't know, as from 1988 until, when did she die? 2012. Yeah, so that many years. And some of the people at the group were saying, "Wow, you know, I didn't really know Catherine." You know, and some of us were very intimate with her teaching, and others were, "I didn't really know her so well." And so I wanted to think, if I was going to sum up and try to bring to you tonight a kind of an essence of Catherine statement. I searched around back through my notes and I found something that I want to share, because it was this kind of teaching from her that is why I am the person that I am. And it's why I practice the way that I practice. And we all have different styles of practice. And as many of you have said, we have various people here in with the, you know, permission to teach, which the brown robe basically gives us, and people in black robes and people with no robes at all sit in the teaching spot. So we're pretty generous here in terms of the invitation for people to teach. But we each have our own flavor. We each have our own unique flavor. And Catherine encouraged us to go deeply into our own personal body-based experience as the core and the grounding source of our practice. I have a couple of quotes from her that express this style that she had of teaching. She said, "The more that we can actually taste experience with the body, know with the body, live in the body, then our experience opens up beyond the boundaries and agendas of the mind." So that was one of the things that she always, whether she was speaking it from the Dharma seat or whether she was invoking it by how she interacted with us, she always directed us back to our body experience. So it wasn't uncommon in the Zendo that if there was some discussion and somebody was getting really up into a lot of concepts, she was quite stern and quite strict. She would just, like, you know, basically interrupt you if you were doing that and say, "Well, where do you feel that in your body?" And if I got too highfalutin with my ideas and I was telling her all this stuff and everything, she would find some way to pull me down to the ground. And it wasn't always comfortable. But that's what she did. That's how she taught. And I'm not saying I always enjoyed it. I'm not saying I always agreed with it, but there you have it. You know, that was her way. Here's another example. She very often brought us poetry into our Sesshin practice. And Sesshin is where we come and we sit all day. We do have breaks and we do have walking and there is food, but it's basically a lot of coming back to the cushion and sitting another period of zazen for a day, for 2 days, for 5, 7 days. There is one coming up in a couple of weeks. And if you have never done Sesshin or if you haven't done it for a while, I really encourage Sesshin practice as a way to go really deep together. So for example, one time she brought a T.S. Eliot quote to one of our Sesshins, the quote being, "The diver must wear a mask to live. The writer must wear a mask in order to be something other than himself. In such a mask, the writer goes down under the ocean, under its luminous tonnage, and through and through and out from the levels of the personal life." And she put down her notes, she adjusted her glasses, and she looked at us, all tired, raggedy from our days of sitting, and she said, "Did you bring your masks with you? What you're doing in Sesshin requires you to drop your ordinary state of mind, your ordinary attitude, and plunge in. We don't get many opportunities to try this out. It's the mask that goes for broke. Let's see what it's like. I'm probably not going to die here in these 5 days." So this image of her looking up for her notes and saying, "Did you bring your masks?" That really reminds me of how Catherine taught. It's like, really, take this opportunity to not just do business as usual with your mind. You know, take this opportunity to plunge down into that dark, deep, scary, wondrous, mysterious place. And that Sesshin really offers us the multiple periods of zazen. As much as I complain in my own being in the first day of Sesshin, why am I doing this? It's so tiring. I don't like it. There's nothing like that feeling when the mind does start to loosen its grip, whether through exhaustion or whether through some grace that happens. And we do begin to see and experience the world beyond the agendas and boundaries of our mind. So that was a lot of how she taught, was to try to create that experience that we could have together in the body of being in that kind of deep place together. So she didn't just, as I say, teach from the cushion. She also taught through how she interacted with her students. And so this is another thing it's not like advertisement today, but I want to plug some stuff. I'm going to plug some things. So I'm plugging Sesshin. I'm plugging multi-period sitting and multi-day sitting as a way to get to know that which is outside of our usual mind. The other thing I want to plug is having a relationship with a teacher to whom you reveal your true self. It's one thing to come here and hear people talk, and we talk and we listen, and those of you who have this experience know what I'm talking about here. There's a whole other dimension that can open up when you make yourself available to have a relationship over time with somebody in the Dharma and make that commitment to each other. The kinds of things that she taught me seem so simple. But it's, again, it's what makes me the one that I am. Early on, again, it was about the body. Early on, I'd be rushing down the path, coming to zazen, you know, trying to get here before the bell rang. And she'd meet me up there at the top of the thing, and she'd put her arm on my arm, and she'd look at me in the eye, and she'd say, "You need to slow down. The first time she said that, I actually didn't know what she was talking about. I didn't. I was shocked. I was like, what? You know? But then maybe the second or the third time, I went, okay, I need to pay attention to this. And I began to pay attention. I'm still working on this practice of slowing down. Some of us need to speed up, but not this one. This is one that needs to slow down physically, mentally, taking a breath. Another coaching she gave me was allow more space around you. She would point out to me how much space I filled with my words, with my activity. Allow more space around you, she'd say to me. Again, I'm still working on that one. Still working on that one when I'm interacting with people. I don't have to pounce my ideas out. I can wait and listen. Feel into who's there. What is it that they are asking for? Not what is my mind saying, but what are they actually asking for? So this is not the kind of teaching that you're going to get in a lecture. And it's not the kind of teaching you're going to get if you go to Dokusan once every 2 years. And I'm not trying to, like, you know, make it sound like you have to do this, because you don't. It's fine to just come to Zazen. It's fine. No problem. I love that about this place. You can practice kind of in any way that you want. You know, we have people who come and they never come to lecture, but they love Zazen. That's great. But again, I want to just say, as I'm kind of touching these different stones of relational practice, that there is a particular invitation with the student-teacher relationship over time that is a part, a very sweet and intimate and beautiful part of Zen. So many of our conversations that we had were in the cracks, or informal, or not even in Dokusan. It was meeting on the path, or leaning in the doorway at the office. I'd be leaving and she'd say something to me and I'd say something to her, and then we'd stand there for 20 minutes and talk. And sometimes I wrote them down. And I'm really glad I did, even though she used to tease me about that. One morning I was just leaving through the door of the office and I turned to her and I said, you know, I could take a sabbatical this fall. It's totally up to me. She said, really? I would never know. You make it sound like you have to do all these things. I'm still that way. I make it sound like I have to do all these things. And then I said to her, well, actually, I'm the one who sets my calendar. I'm self-employed. So I was confessing to her. I am actually the one who sets my calendar. And so she just kind of looked at me. She goes, well, you just haven't been stopped yet by something big enough to get your attention. Shakyamuni Buddha, this is a quote in Catherine, Shakyamuni Buddha was stopped when he saw sickness, old age, and death. Right? He left his father's palace and he saw sickness, old age, and death, and he went, I need to change my life. I need to leave the palace and I need to go out and I need to investigate this. She didn't say that. She said, Shakyamuni Buddha was stopped when he saw sickness, old age, and death. And she said to me, this is vintage Catherine, you need to get cancer. Or have your mother die. Or lose your relationship. Or fully ingest the teaching. I said, I'll take that. She said, but that's the kind of magnitude that I need. And many of you know, and I'm not going to talk very much about this. In fact, I really won't talk about the details at all. We had a very rough period at the end of her life where we were very estranged from one another. And there it is. Good, I did bring it. I wrote about it. It's up on the bulletin board. If you're curious about it, you could read that little thing called Me and My Imperfect Teacher. I wrote a piece for Buddha Dharma, and they published it. We did get to a place of forgiveness before she died, thanks to Patrick and his encouragement, that I have such a conversation with her, for which I will be eternally grateful. But even during the time when she and I were estranged, we had relationship. Apparently, and this is, again, this is something Patrick told me, and I hope I got it right. You can correct it if I didn't. But I had always told her my big problem, it still is my big problem, that how can such an imperfect practitioner as me do anything noble in Zen? Because I always feel like I'm not doing good enough. That's my little problem. How can it be that after so much time I still have the same complaints that I've had from when I started my practice? And Patrick told me, and he knows this because they never were estranged, so she was talking to him all the time. She worried about, she called that Kathy's question, how can I do this practice when I'm so imperfect? She called it Kathy's question, and even when she and I weren't really talking to each other because we were mad at each other, she was thinking about my question. She was thinking about my question. I didn't know that, but she was. And apparently she even figured out an answer to tell me that she told Patrick, but she never told me because we were estranged. My loss that I didn't get to have this conversation with her directly. And yet how moving, even posthumously, my teacher is teaching me through Patrick, right? So what her best answer to Kathy's question, how can I do this practice when I'm so imperfect, was this. She said, according to Patrick, and according to my memory of what Patrick said, practice is like this big tree that grows out of the center of the earth, and it's always there. You can touch it any time. It doesn't matter what you think about how you're doing, and it doesn't matter about your complaints. The tree is just there, and it's there to support you. Is that what she said? So this is actually one of the deepest teachings for me from Catherine. And I didn't even get to hear it directly because of causes and conditions, because of our mutual imperfection. But on the other hand, how beautiful that now we have this teaching from her, that no matter what we think about our practice, that it's just this big tree that grows out of the center of the earth, and you can touch it any time, and it's always there to support you. So I like that a lot. So that's what I want to say about practicing with a teacher. Then there's practicing with each other. Dharma companions, right? And there's so many more things I could say about Catherine, but I'm going to move on to Dharma companions. And I got permission from Sally that I could share about this, and so I will. So we had a discussion group that went on here at the Zen Center for many years on Sunday night, and there are other discussion groups that are going on right now. So here's another plug. I told you this is going to be the lecture where I plug a lot of things. There, I think, are three active, or and maybe four if we count the global warming, but Fridays at 1 o'clock here in the Zendo, studying the great koans of the Zen tradition with community, reading together, talking about it together, Monday morning and Tuesday morning, after breakfast, studying a variety of teachings. They work their way through all sorts of different books and teachings. There's a monthly
with discussion,
monthly discussion about how do we practice in this age of global warming, right? And at different times, there's, did I miss any? Those are the main.
Schools in the world, which is once a month.
Okay, there's, yeah. So this format of meeting with practitioners and studying something together and then discussing and sharing about your lives is something we've been doing here for a long time. And, you know, we're always experimenting with that. So there's this idea now, Saturday mornings, there's a group of people that come here. So we're starting to offer some discussion after Saturday morning's Zazen. Okay? But here's the thing about that, and I want to talk about an encounter that Sally and I had many years ago in that group, just to give you a flavor for what kind of contemporary, Dharma companion relationship can sound like. And I'm sure if you went to any of these groups, you would have some version of that. And you don't even have to be in a group. You can even just go up to somebody here and say, hey, tell me about your practice. What are you working on? Or what are you studying right now? Or what is it about Buddhism that interests you? You know, we can talk this way with each other. It's okay. Sometimes people say, oh, T, it's so awkward. I don't know what to say. It's like a cocktail party. Well, then talk about Buddhism. You know, you don't have to think about small talk. This is a Zen center. You know, you could actually ask somebody something about Buddhism. And if a person's new, then you can share with them about your practice or your questions or what you struggle with. So here was a conversation over a couple of weeks that Sally and I had. I had been studying a koan in the Mumon Kan, and it has a little poem at the end of it. And the poem goes, flowers with the spring, autumn with the moon, breezes in the summer, winter snow. If you do not clutter your mind with useless thoughts, then you will have the best days of your life. I'm going to read that again. That's an awesome teaching. Flowers with the spring, autumn with the moon, breezes in the summer, winter snow. If you do not clutter your mind with useless thoughts, then you will have the best days of your life. So I love that. I was studying that. So at group, in this group, the Sunday night group, what we did is we talked about what we're practicing with in our lives. And what are we struggling with, and what are we learning. So that was the subject for many years. So I announced at group that I was practicing not having useless thoughts, because I love this poem, and I see that if I don't clutter my mind with useless thoughts, I'll have the best days of my life. That sounds pretty good to me, so I will practice not having useless thoughts. And Sally said, what do you mean, no useless thoughts? I thought that our practice was to accept whatever arises. Aren't you being discriminating if you're saying, oh, this is a useful thought and this is not a useful thought? Now, that's a pretty darn good question. You know, it's like, you know, she's right. That is the teaching here in Zen, that we don't discriminate. And yet here I was discriminating, right? So I appreciated and welcomed what she said. And I do agree that we do emphasize the Dharma of emptiness, which is the one that she was pointing to. But guess what? We're always balancing with this thing in Zen. We have emptiness, but we also have form. We have non-discrimination, but we also have discrimination. So I spoke up for the side of discrimination. And I basically said back to her, well, but I do think that I have useless thoughts, and I don't want to think them. Right? So this is form and emptiness, having a discussion together. Right? And then she asked me, well, okay, then what are your useless thoughts? If you want to take a stand that you're having useless thoughts, what are they? This is a great dialogue. It really is. So here's what I said. Now, this was not premeditated, because this was just a conversation, right? I said, well, I thought about it. What is a useless thought for me? That which would take me away from my ability to experience the flowers in the spring, the autumn with the moon, the breezes in the snow, the breezes in the summer and the winter snow. That which would make me think that these are not the best days of my life. That's what I'm calling useless thoughts. And that's what I'm practicing to try to free myself from. And she said, I'm not so sure about that. So, a little bit more to come. But this is, okay, this is a koan right here. Who was right and who was wrong? Was I right or was Sally right? And in koans, I mean, don't we love to argue about this? No, I'm right. There are useless thoughts. No, I'm right. There are no useless thoughts. Zen people love to argue form versus emptiness, on and on and on and on. And at some point, what we realize is, of course, we're both right. Well, we're both wrong, and we're both right. There's a time and a place for each one. But so anyhow, so there we had that, and that was juicy and exciting to talk with each other that way. But there's more. Several weeks later. Is this still okay, Sally?
Yeah.
Okay, you don't remember any of it, right? Well, and really, I just must say, I confess, I'm a writer, and when things happen that I think are interesting, I write them down, and especially Zen dialogues. I've just, you know, because here we are, what do we read is the dialogues. If Colin Edjo had not written down what Dogen said, we wouldn't know what Dogen said, right? And I'm not saying lofty, we're all like Dogen and Koan, but actually we are. Because the ancestors of old were exactly as we, and we in the future shall be Buddhas and ancestors. And if we're not writing down our dialogues, then our future generations won't be able to learn from us. So I'm into it. Anyhow, and again, I must say, I used to get teased about this. Sorry, Catherine, but isn't it good now? Because now I can honor your teaching like this. So several weeks later, Sally said something that made it sound like she wanted to improve her practice. She wanted to be better at certain things. And I laughed and said, and I do not know where this came from, I laughed and I said, but this is a useless practice. Yeah, I thought it was funny too. Wait a minute, wasn't I contradicting myself? 2 weeks ago, I had been taking a stand for one thing, and here I was basically saying, laughing, you know, this is a useless practice. Well, at the time I thought it was kind of funny, but then I went home and actually felt bad about it. I thought, well, that's pretty discouraging to be saying to my Dharma sister that it's a useless practice. What do I say there? Am I being flippant? Why have I come here for 20 years if I think this is a useless practice? So I felt kind of bad that I had said that. So I emailed her and I said, I don't mean to be discouraging when I speak like that. And she responded that actually, she said, this kind of exchange is exactly what I most crave. Quote, it felt like a lightning bolt zapping my insides. I bow in gratitude for your helping me to open to the very thing that can never be sought. It felt like a lightning bolt zapping my insides. I bow in gratitude for your helping me to open to the very thing that can never be sought. And this is how we can help each other, is by helping each other open to that very thing. We want it so much, and we try to get it, and yet it's right here. And we can help each other to open to it. And this opportunity is always here in all of our relationships, even in our simple encounters. You know, I treasure the little, you know, I often come in, I'm one of the evening people rather than one of the morning people. So I'm here in the evenings frequently, and it's usually not a huge crowd, but it's kind of a regular committed bunch. And there's so much sweetness. There's so much sweetness just in that simple intimacy. It's not big and it's not fancy. It's usually just about a 10-minute service, but we just, you know, we stand out there and we bow to each other, and it just feels so good to come here and take 40 minutes to sit together and then 10 minutes to chant together, you know. Lisa rides her bike and comes and sits for 40 minutes and chants for 10 minutes, and then we go off and we do our thing, you know. So I'm just trying to describe all these various ways that we can support each other's practice, whether it's by engaging in the Dharma together or studying material or sitting or chanting or, you know, working side by side or cooking on Fridays. I mean, these activities are all in service of waking up together. And this is just one of the ways that we can do it. Now, Kokyo, when you say your clock is 5 minutes fast, if it says 7:24, that means it's really like 7:20.
That's right.
Okay, good. Phew. So it's almost time for me to say to stop talking and ask you if there's anything that you would like to say. But I want to just say one more thing. Because, you know, I've talked before, I gave a talk, I don't know, some months ago, about one of my favorite stories, Dotoku. The monk who, there's the monk who lives at the ravine, and then there's the hut master, and Seppo, or Zhui Feng, he's also called, goes out to challenge him, and they basically just meet in the present moment and have a jolly time just being together. You know, basically the thing there is, you know, do you express the truth or not? You know, express the truth and I will not shave your head. I mean, that's the subject of this story. And when we talk about things like that, then of course we have to think about the truth. What's the truth? Am I expressing the truth or not? How would I know I was expressing the truth or not? And the punchline really of this story is that, as I understand it, is that truth is not about a sanctified thing, but it's our experience of authenticity together. It's the feeling that we get in our bodies and in our hearts when we know that we're in this place where we are meeting in our authenticity. So, you know, do you express the truth or not? Are you interested in bringing forth your authentic being? Are you interested in receiving my authentic being? Are you willing to take a leap of faith? Are you willing to be my partner even though we don't really know what's going to happen? Are you willing to trust that understanding will evolve? And can you viscerally feel the energy and the creativity that is unleashed when we are speaking wholeheartedly and doing what really matters? And in conclusion, Dogen writes at the end of Dotoku, he says, there are ways for good friends in the expression of the truth to pay unexpected visits. And between friends who are unable to say anything, although they do not expect recognition, the means are already present for themselves to be known. Where there is learning, in practice of knowing the self, there is the reality of expressing the truth. So these are all ways that we can support each other in our expression of our authentic truth that we do here every day at Warm Jewel Temple. And here you are right now participating in one of our forms, and there's these other many forms that I've mentioned that you might consider if any of them would be new or a return for you. So we've got a few minutes if there are some comments or questions that you have. The floor is open. Yes?
I have enjoyed remembering Catherine and that she taught us all to be graceful, both by example and verbal encouragement. And I think we're all more graceful as a result. So it was good to remember.
Thank you for reminding me of this great conversation that we had over a long period. I just wanted to follow up with this useless thought thing. I just want to let everyone know that I think, you know, these plugs that you're making for, you know, doing this on and having maybe a group, discussion group to support practices has been, like, transformative for me. And when you said that, I remember the useless thoughts. And that was actually a turning point, a huge turning point for me to
not that, or useless practice, it's that it's a practice of no use, is what I realized. And from that day on, when I sat zazen, it was no longer, oh, I'm sitting zazen to get to something. I just completely dropped it from that day on. And that was the zap. And I think you can't get that, you're right, you can't get that from a lecture. It's really in that interpersonal relationship.
Yeah, because, you know, when I'm thinking about that, it's like it was not premeditated. And so there's something about the liveliness of what arises in the moment through the interaction. And that's, I think, the part that's outside of the scriptures, is that, you know, it's spontaneous. And you don't know what you're going to say, and you don't know what the other is going to say, because you're actually meeting in the moment and discovering together what is true. And so then it's amazing the kinds of things that come up, the wisdom that arises from this sort of deep place. Yeah, please.
So I'm saying this as someone who is only 19 and has only a month to go until I turn 20. One of the many things that draws me to this talk is to understand life's greater meaning. You know, because if I have a lot of life to go with, let's be honest with ourselves, I do have a lot of life to go in this modern age. I want it to have some sort of meaning. I don't want to just be, you know, throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. I want there to be some, you know, greater unifying meaning. And that's sort of what draws me to Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Raise your hand if that rings a bell for you in terms of what maybe brought you interested in studying the Buddha Dharma. So please know you're not alone. We call that way-seeking mind. It's like, you know, a bodhicitta, you know, it's true. We don't have to do any of this. We could just go home, watch Netflix, you know, pop a brewski, eat a bag of chips, you know, throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. That's a great analogy. But here we are, you know, we come to the Zendo, we sit Zazen, we study these texts, and all the people that we're reading about had similar questions. And, you know, the answers, or the, maybe not answers, but the commentary on your question, you know, each religion has its version of the commentary, and Buddhism has one version, and Zen has then a particular version. So I just really invite you to dive in and read and see what are some of the ways that that question is talked about. And also to just reflect in your own being as you practice, how would I answer that question? And it might change over time. You know, I think maybe those of us who aren't lucky enough to have the majority of our life ahead of us, you know, you do kind of at some point, you do start going, well, you know, it may not be the ultimate answer, but for this life, this helps me. You know, and if we had more time, in fact, that would be another great hour, but we're not going to do it because it's almost time to say goodbye. You know, would be to say, well, how would different ones of us say that we've come to find what is it that gives us some meaning and purpose so that we don't have to just throw things at the wall and see what sticks? You know, that's a great question. So thanks for bringing it forward. I think we have time for one more, if there is one more thing that wants to be said. Yes.
I appreciate very much your talking about relations, and it's a really powerful part of Zen practice. And when I first went to Gringolt for a practice period, I had a dark night of the soul of like, whoa, not can I do the meditation, but can I be in community like this?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But you learn so much in a soaking in quiet way about yourself and your life, and I think that's the most really an area for transformation. Yeah.
Thank you. And again, just to close here, I just really honor that, again, it seems so, like, almost like a paradox isn't the right word, but Zen looks so solitary and looks so quiet, and yet when it is quite amazing when you read, and not even Zen, but like, okay, this is going to be my closing. Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, Buddhism. Now, he had his awakening experience alone under the Bodhi tree. True, he formulated a lot of things. But the teachings that we know as Buddhism were formulated through his engagement with his community. I mean, he wasn't even sure he wanted to come down off the mountain, from what I understand. And it was like, no, we want you to tell us what happened to you. We want to understand these insights that you had.
He didn't even write down what he taught. Either.
He didn't even write down what he taught. Exactly. It was remembered, but he honed all of his ideas by teaching in response to the engaging with the questions of his community. And so many of the sutras, it starts, it's questions. Hey, Buddha. You know, what about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? And then he had to think on his feet. And he had some sense maybe of what he wanted to say, but he had to learn how to articulate it. And he articulated it different ways with different groups, skillful means. So it's not just Zen, obviously, but it goes all the way back into our tradition, how relational it is. And so I just think it's important to remember that, because we are more known for the, you know, quiet, calm, you know, pistachios. I mean, they don't say, eat these nuts and you'll be able to really have better relationships with your community, or, you know what I mean? You'll awaken with other people through mutual insight if you eat these nuts. You know, it's just interesting to me how everybody focuses just on that one important but one part. So it is definitely time to stop, because it's 7:36.
Minus five.
Is 7:31. So that's, it is definitely time to stop. So we shall. And I hope that this has been something that can nourish you and encourage you. And thank you so much for coming and sharing in this Dharma tonight. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Illusions are inexhaustible. I bow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I bow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable.